And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right, just covering down on some major ground across the southeast U.S. of A. Y'all, I'm talking about this show. Goes like from Huntsville all the way back on over to Chattanooga. I'm talking about from Tuscaloosa back on over to Gadsden. I mean all the way down to that prettiest little town on the plains called Auburn. And yes, stretching across the border then to Fort Benning. It is called Fort Benning now. Fort Benning, Georgia. And even big old patches of North Georgia and Mississippi thrown in, just for good measure. All right, listen, I got several text messages, but I've also got one phone call that I will take before I change gears here, talking about the previous topic. So let me just grab it real quick. Robert from Athens. Hey, Robert, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Phil.
Good, good, good. What's on your mind?
You know, I would love to take these judges on an all-expense-paid Alabama boat ride for free, expense.
Is that similar to the Missouri boat ride from Outlaw Josie Wales?
Well, I guess it could be because most of my family's from Missouri, so that would do good too.
Yeah, sooner or later, there's going to be something's going to have to be said about what is judicial discretion and what is just activism, because when you look at how much is coming against Trump, it feels like activism.
They need to go ahead and take it to the Supreme Court and get it over with instead of dragging this stuff out some way.
Yeah. Well, and some of these have already gone, and some have come back, and then we've got others that I think are about to go. The question is, will the court take it up? And then we got to keep our eye on John Roberts. He's like a moving target when it comes to whether he's conservative or not. Hey, Robert, thanks for the call, man. Appreciate you.
Yeah.
What else I got here? Roughly in from Huntsville, checking in, just letting us know the astronauts are coming home. Yes, indeed. It said, don't you think that after interview the people who they're talking about the astronauts, they should always add no thanks to Joe Biden? Yes, they should. I got a long text from Lisa from Huntsville about taxing on prescriptions, which is not on topic.
So she says she got a weird, I think she copy and pasted the text she got. About that, yeah.
I see what's happening. Oh, this is the thing about pharmacy benefit managers and all that. So we're going to dig into that here pretty soon because it's becoming a thing. It's becoming a thing nationwide, too. And then lastly, Chris Mathens again says, Colonel Williams, I appreciate the clarification. Doesn't seem that many people provide a lot of clarification on this kind of stuff. Once again, love the show. Always nice when you dive a little deeper about some things that happen behind the scenes of government. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate you, man. And we'll talk more about it. All right, let me dive on in here. This is actually dipper number one.
Well, we had a three dipper day yesterday.
We did.
I think you earned a little leeway.
Why, thank today. You, JP. Yeah. Thank you so much. Can I have some applause? Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Very good. All right. The auto pen presidency. First of all, just keep in mind, everybody kind of understands it, but I'll say it again anyway. The auto pen is actually a machine that once you program the president's signature, the machine can then recreate it in live ink, like wet ink. So you're not just getting a carbon copy like a copier. You're getting something that has wet ink on it because that means more. It feels legit. And the president has to consciously provide his signature for it to be entered into the machine for use. This has been around for a while, by the way. My recollection was it goes back to, I think, Lyndon Johnson, maybe, was the first president. Maybe even Eisenhower were the first ones to use the auto pen. It's not unknown. It's not illegal. But this sometimes falls into the realm of just because you can doesn't mean you should. You know what I'm saying? So we got a real problem right now because a study came out. The Heritage Foundation did this. A study came out just, I think it was last week. It was. Just last week, the Heritage Foundation released a report saying that they had obtained images of everything that Biden signed in official capacity to the extent they could for the entire 4 years he was in office. And it appears that 90%+ of what he signed was auto pen. Whoa. Okay, that's not what we expect. That is absolutely not what we expect. I mean, it was everything from, you know, executive orders and presidential decrees and things like the last-minute pardons for members of his own family and Fauci and General Milley and members of the January 6th committee, all of this stuff. They even found, too, that he pardoned six criminals using auto pen with the document saying, signed at the city of Washington, while he was vacationing and golfing in the U.S. Virgin Islands, which means, okay, you didn't do it. You weren't even there. You weren't even in the Oval Office to say, yeah, I'm busy with the prime minister of so-and-so country, so how about you use the auto pen on that one? He didn't do it. This is a mess, y'all. And it's called to question a lot of what he did. There's already so much out there about whether or not he was cognitively impaired. I'm going to go ahead and do the thing I have to do again. I have to say it because I'm an attorney. It would be inappropriate for me. It would be unethical for me to know that there's a law in place about certain things and not speak to it. So I won't rush off into rhetoric. I'll first say a decision or a determination of incompetence is a judicial determination. You and I can watch him and go, oh, boy, ain't right. But Phil, the attorney, can't say that person is now incompetent because I understand that that has to go before a probate court. And there has to be a judicial determination, which is based upon medical review and based upon evidence provided to the court. And then they have to appoint a guardian ad litem to make sure he has actual representation. So all these things have to happen. And I get that. But you and I both know, oh boy, ain't right. I mean, the reality is Biden was an impaired individual and no one could say otherwise. So even though we don't have a judicial determination of incompetency to legally stand upon to say those documents shouldn't be allowed to count, we can now couple what we do know about his obvious decline, even while he was in office. You could see it while he was in office. I mean, the Biden that we saw running in 2020, who was already goofy and having trouble, was far and away worse by the time we got to him leaving office in early 2025. I mean, the decline was notable right up to the debate in June of last year. So how is it then that all these auto pen signatures got done? How does this work? Well, apparently there were people that had the authority to allegedly do it. Hang on, I've got one in here real quick. Let me find it. Greg Jarrett, who is the Fox News legal analyst. Yeah, here it is. Greg Jarrett, he made a great point on this. He said, this is Dateline today, actually. He says, we're going to wind up having to have a whistleblower. So, and I agree. I think I said that to Charlene the other night. It's not going to work. This thing is not going to get unraveled fully until someone is willing to be a whistleblower. Now, we already have articles where anonymous sources in the Biden administration's staff are quoted as saying blank, but it's still being listed as anonymous sources. Until we get a true whistleblower, someone who comes forward in either under duress, you know, like being pressured with, you know, their own indictment, says, look, I'll give you some information if you'll give me a break. That happens all the time. Or someone who just says, I can't sleep at night knowing what I know, and they come forward. But Greg Jarrett points out, until we get a whistleblower with what he called incriminating information to support the claims that Joe Biden's pardons are void, they're still going to stand. But then he said this point. He said, using an auto pen is perfectly legal. He said presidents have used it going back to, he said, Harry Truman, and maybe before. He said, as long as there is consent and authorization. Ah, now we get to the point. Consent and authorization. He said consent is defined by three things, and he's right. Consent has to be voluntary, willing, and conscious. In other words, someone didn't twist his arm, someone didn't tell him what to say, and he was not so impaired that he couldn't understand it, and that he was conscious. In other words, he was literally aware of and involved in the decision making. And if you find that those things weren't there, you got a real problem. So let me dive a little deeper in my stack. I'll pull another one out. Here it is. Do you remember this story? I thought of this morning. This is what I do. I prepare things for you guys so you don't have to go find it. By the way, I will say this. All our resources, when you hear me rattle paper, if you go to our website, I just thought of this, rightsidemedia.org. If you go to rightsidemedia.org and you click on the live stream and you're like watching me sitting in studio right now, talking and opining and JP clicking in with me and guests and all that. If you're watching the live stream, right below the live stream, it says resources. Every article that I rattle is there for you in case you want to go find it yourself. All right. Back in January of this year, I mean, one of his last-minute moves, allegedly, was the commutation of multiple sentences and, oh, by the way, the pardon of multiple others from ever being sentenced. The commutations are where he takes and downgrades a sentence. And if you remember, he took virtually everybody who was on federal death row and he commuted their sentences to life in prison. Basically took the death penalty off the table. How about this? When those happen, the commutation of a sentence or the pardon of someone who could be criminally liable for something or maybe has already been indicted or convicted. When you commute or pardon, it usually is something that rose to your attention because someone has now petitioned the president to do so. Happens in governor's offices too. You petition for mercy and clemency from the office of the executive, in this case, the president. You don't just dream it up on your own. The president doesn't wake up in the morning and go, I feel like I'm going to find somebody named John Smith who needs a commutation. It doesn't work that way. The president doesn't roll over in bed and go, you know, I'm just thinking, I like the idea of pardoning a murderer. It doesn't work that way. It's supposed to be a case-by-case basis, reviewed upon the petition of someone. And oh, by the way, guess what? There's actually someone called a pardon attorney. I'm going to come back to that in a minute. There's a pardon attorney in the Department of Justice. It's a pretty important position. But let me go back to what happened in January. Story here I pulled off of NBC. Phil, did you go to NBC? I did. NBC, January 6th. Two prisoners among the 37 federal inmates whose death sentences were commuted by President Biden have taken an unusual stance. They're refusing to sign the paperwork accepting the clemency position. Wait a minute. Hold on a second. I thought all of these were petitions. I thought they all wanted it. I thought they came to the president going, please, Mr. President, use the power granted to you in the authority of the presidency and under the Constitution to grant clemency. No. You got two of them right here that didn't even want it. Why would that be? Because they're still appealing their sentences. They believe they have the opportunity to use the fact that it's a death penalty to pursue additional appeals of their sentencing in general. And when he took the death penalty off, it meant that they lost part of their appeal process. And these guys are like, wait a minute. No. How do you have a commutation of a sentence if the people whose sentence you're commuting did not even want it? You get what I'm saying? It's obvious that you had somebody batching these things up in the office of the president and creating something out of whole cloth that the people who are being pardoned or commuted did not even seek on their own.
Yeah, if you think pardoning those folks is pretty nuts, just wait till you see Joe Biden's reaction when you find out he did that. Probably just like ours.
Yeah, but Joe, this guy named Shannon Nagofsky and Lynn Davis, the other dude, in Terre Haute, Indiana, they don't want your commutations. I never pardoned
who?
Them.
Who is that?
Yeah, who's that? What are you trying to say to me? Is it pudding time yet? I mean, so, by the way, I enjoyed some pudding the other night, and I couldn't help think about the irony that I've used that joke. And anyway, the bottom line is this. There ain't no way in the world every one of these was a case-by-case basis brought to the president because it was important to those on the outside. This is activist, and when you know you have activist mentality using the auto pen, because these were apparently done by auto pen. I'm building a circumstantial case here. I'm lawyering up for you. This is not inadmissible. This goes to what we call the pattern and practice in the courtroom. I think that I'm creating an admissibility on the basis of pattern and practice. And I think what we're looking at is the standard business practice in the Biden White House was activism. And I think we're looking at it right now and that the auto pen should be questioned. Oh, by the way, the circumstantial framework of this pattern and practice that I'm building includes the fact that not even everybody who received the benefit of these signatures had ever sought it, which means that someone in the White House had to have been the one who dreamed it up. When I get back from this break, I'm going to tell you about the pardon attorney. That's a thing. There's an actual pardon attorney, like somebody who's got a job just to review these. And I'm thinking, why do you have the job? We got an auto pen. Why do we need you? Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. All right, so I'm in this this dipper, the Auto Pen presidency. I just gave you some pretty dynamic analysis a moment ago. That the circumstantial evidence is mounting that the Auto Pen was being abused. In part because we can see that some of the people who got the benefit of the auto pen for major pieces of executive action didn't even want it. They didn't ask for it. In fact, they're rejecting it. Well, what does that tell you? That there had to be an activist in the White House putting this together as opposed to somebody else on the outside saying, would you please? There is also the office of the pardon attorney. I'd never heard of this. I would have assumed it existed, but I didn't realize it had a separate office. I mean, I'd like to believe that none of these pardons and other acts of clemency have any basis outside of, you know, strong legal review. So we got an article here from Red State. It's the only place that I've seen report this. They say they originally published this about a week ago, and they decided to republish it in the wake of all the auto pen controversy. Because what they reported before the auto pen report came out from the Heritage Foundation, what they reported about 2 weeks ago is that Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche, works for Pam Bondi, on his second day in office, he sent a written notice of termination to an attorney named Liz Oyer. She's the pardon attorney in the DOJ. So he was basically, this was, okay, first of all, the fact that he did it on day two, I mean, oh boy, didn't even know where the bathrooms were in the building yet. And he's already issuing a letter of termination by name to a single individual named Liz Oyer, who is a pardon attorney in the DOJ. It says the pardon attorney is one of these senior executive service positions. So it's an SES position. Those of y'all in government service, you know that's pretty senior. Once you hit SES, you're a careerist. You've got senior rank. This is a top position that serves in an advisory role, basically. It receives pardon applications from current federal inmates and those who've already served their sentences. And this pardon attorney, like it sounds, is the one who investigates each one and provides a case-by-case legal review. Well, she was appointed by Merrick Garland. Oh, good. Yay. I'm already losing faith in her position. So Liz Oyer was the pardon attorney appointed by Merrick Garland in 2022. Guess what her career had been before that? She was a criminal defense attorney, meaning she was the ones helping get criminals, you know, lighter sentencing or plea deals or trying to defend their interests. And there's a place for that. There absolutely is. And I respect it. And I've got friends who are criminal defense attorneys. But when I see someone who is a career assistant federal defender, a federal defender in the District of Maryland, what does that mean? They are the court appointed. They are the ones who spend their career helping anybody and everybody deal with their sentences. She's also spent some time as a partnership in a big firm where she worked in their criminal defense firm. And she, by the way, she was escorted out of the building without notice. In other words, there's probably an investigation going on of some type, and they did not want her to have a chance to delete files. Day two, the boss comes in, sends her a by name, and has the security escort her out of the building. More on this when I get back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. The auto pen presidency will unpack it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. Alabama and Tennessee's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number three. Hour number three on a Taco Tuesday. So I'm wrapping this topic of the auto pen presidency. I'll give you a couple of quick recaps to bring us back to where I'm about to go next. A, auto pen is legal, but it does require conscious consent and authority given by the president for someone to exercise the use of the machine. So there's that. Do we have that? We don't know, but what we do know is there were at least six of his pardons that were signed with the document itself saying signed in Washington, D.C. while he was vacationing in the Virgin Islands playing golf. So, makes you wonder. We have no way of knowing if Biden is truly what they would judge in a court of law to be mentally incompetent. We can look at him and say he's certainly uninspiring. He certainly has declined. We can certainly see how tired and how incapable he appears to be. But the actual adjudication of incompetency is not before us, so we can't use that to stand on in a legal sense. In other words, we can't go in there and say, Biden has now been declared incompetent by a court of adequate jurisdiction, therefore, all those pardons and commutations and executive orders are null and void. We can look at it and feel that way, but legally speaking, we're not there yet. So we have to build the circumstantial case around it. In the absence of a true ruling of competency, what do we know about this? Well, we know that he wasn't present when some of them were signed. We can tell that from those six. We know that 90% of them, like vastly more than any other president that we know of in modern history, have been signed by AutoPen. We know that from a recent study that was provided to the world by the Heritage Foundation. We also know, oh, by the way, that there are two prisoners on federal death row who are rejecting the commutation of their sentence by Biden, signed by AutoPen, because they say they never wanted it. They don't want it. So how did it come to be? Well, that seems to imply that there were activists in the White House helping batch together agenda items as opposed to answering true petitions. And then I told you right before the break that the pardon attorney, the one who was supposed to review all of these things under the Department of Justice guidelines on a case-by-case basis and provide legal review to accompany each petition for pardon to the president, the pardon attorney was literally dismissed from her job by name and escorted out of the building on the second day of the seating of the new attorney general and deputy attorney general. Okay, let's talk about this. She was escorted out of the building, which seems to imply that there was some concern about what would happen if she was given free rein to clean up her office and work her way out of the building on her own time. In other words, they didn't want her shredding or deleting anything. They didn't want her downloading anything. They didn't want her taking something with her she shouldn't have. They didn't want her taking files and putting them back where they shouldn't have been before. So Pam Oyer is gone. Is it Pam Oyer? Liz Oyer. Liz Oyer is gone. But here's the other thing. Something we're going to have to deal with and overcome, because we can't just do away with these things. Most of the times, the issuance of a presidential pardon, which is one of the big things we're looking at here, like, you know, Mark Milley and Hunter Biden and all the others, the January 6th Commission, those are considered non-justiciable. That's just a fancy way of saying you can't take those to court. Those are non-justiciable. Presidential pardons are deemed to be an inherent power of the executive branch. The office of the presidency is vested with that power. It's non-justiciable. You can't just look at it and go, I'm sorry, I reject that, I'm taking that to court. No, it doesn't work that way. You can't do that. Absent some of what we already talked about. So two issues now are there which may provide basis for the inquiry. Was there, in fact, dementia? Was there, in fact, an inability to express consent and grant authority for the use of the auto pen? And the other is the ongoing analysis of the auto pen is showing that it would have been physically impossible for the president to have been present and to grant authority. Now, it's the modern world. It's the age of communication. You can text the guy while he's playing on a golf course in the Virgin Islands. But did they? It's going to literally take a whistleblower to break that open. Here's the thing. It makes you wonder, though. Okay, we still have an auto pen, right? We do. New York Post is reporting that despite everything I just said, the auto pen still exists. It does. But the Trump White House is handling it entirely differently. And they should. So New York Post is reporting that internal, this is what Dateline of the story is what? Hang on, let me turn back my page. Dateline, New York Post, Dateline, Saturday. Actually, Friday. It was Friday. An internal memo drafted last Thursday, by Trump Staff Secretary William Scharf. If you watched Trump, sitting at the Resolute desk in the Oval Office signing executive orders, as a guy who always hands them to him, Mr. President, this is the one that does so and so. That's a guy named William Scharf. He's the special staff secretary. And he has laid out the restrictive current use of the auto pen. He says, number one, we will not, this is in quotes, we do not use the auto pen for documents that exercise the power of the presidency. So, for example, he says, we do not use the auto pen for executive orders, for presidential memorandums, for special decisions, for nominations, appointments, orders, or commissions, or bills. In other words, if you're exercising the true power of the presidency, the Trump administration will not allow the auto pen. You will get that to the man himself. He will sign it. He also says we don't use the auto pen for just even routine purposes, like we don't use it to invite foreign leaders to the White House. The president believes he should personally sign those. I love that. I'm good with that. That feels very conscious. It feels very deliberate. It feels very real. He says we will occasionally use the auto pen when a single document requires multiple presidential signatures or when multiple copies of the single document require signing, but only after the president personally signed off the first time and only at his direction. It does say that there will be times when the auto pen will be used for what they consider to be things like congratulatory messages, you know, birthday wishes, things like that from the office of the presidency where these are being issued out. But the Trump administration has made it very, very clear. The auto pen abuse stops now. All right, that's huge. I mean, I just maybe it just fascinates me. I don't know. Maybe because I'm an attorney and I see documents and I know the value of signature, the value of notary, the value of witnessed testimony, the value of what it means to actually put something to paper, and the fact that even in today's digital age, there are times when wet ink is more important than digital. It just is. Because it may be old school, but it's real school.
I think it just points to, though, and illustrates even more, like how little Joe Biden may have been doing in his own presidency. Because whoever has access to the auto pen, you can do whatever you want.
That's exactly right.
I think, and I know we've talked about it over and over again, but just I think the instance with Mike Johnson in the office where he didn't know he was doing stuff, executive orders, like I think that coupled with us finding out how many of his orders were done by auto pen, just proves to show even more that there were people behind the scenes, staffers that were actually making decisions instead of him.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I'm trying to find one of my articles that I don't think I dove into in far enough. Actually, here it is. Biden sources suspect that a key aide may have been the abuse of the auto pen. So this is one of those unnamed sources say kind of thing. It's also a New York Post article. And it outlined, and I think her name was Nanda Tunin. I think Nanda Tunin was considered to be the one who was oftentimes doing this, and people were really worried about how far afield she was getting. But she was also one of those staffers who the junior staff felt like they couldn't cross her. They would be putting themselves at risk. Listen, I'm going to tell you right now, there's important things that happen in life, and sometimes you got to put yourself at risk, just saying. So I'm hoping we find a whistleblower. Let me get a few text messages before I go to the break and come back with the next dipper. Ken from Harvest says, in light of recent discoveries, a new nickname is in order. Sleepy Joe ought to be Auto Pen Joe. I am with you, Ken from Harvest.
Did you see the meme Trump put out on his Truth Social? It had like the picture of Trump's first portrait, and then in the middle between the two Trump portraits was just a portrait of an auto pen. It's like, we had an auto pen president.
I did see that. Replacing the official portrait of Biden with an auto pen.
It's sad, but true.
It's oh God. The things that we avoided by getting him out of office. There's no telling what could have happened if there had been a second round, or for that matter, for Kamala Harris. Gary from Decatur says, I'm sorry, but nothing's going to happen with this auto pen scandal as the Republicans will discover it was not legally done by his staffers and representatives. There's nothing we can do now but see that it won't happen again in the future. Democrats always seem to get away. Okay, so here's one thing that's out there, Gary. One of the attorney generals, I believe it was Missouri, maybe it was Kansas, has already filed suit on this and demanded an investigation because, he points out, the states are stuck with the results because these people that are being pardoned and released into the communities come back to their states. Some of them could be retried under state law in the absence of federal prosecution. And the AGs want to know, what do we do? Is it legit? Plus, you also have executive orders that impacted things like everything from schools to funding to God knows what, and it impacted the states. And so the attorney generals are saying, it's not just that it's done, we're still living with it. And so, Gary, that's the one thing I will say is the impact of what happened with these signatures is still being felt. Can we go back and undo the signature? No. But can we find out whether or not the impacts should still be felt by people, or can we stop the impacts? I say stop the impacts. Mike from Florence says, when I hear Biden and pudding, pudding packs are the last thing that come to mind. I said, pull-ups are usually the first. Oh, Lord. Charles from Decatur says, man, I told my two sisters I was thinking about running for city council. They laughed at me. I told my dad, said he'd be my campaign manager. That's the support everyone needs from parents. Charles from Decatur. Charles, go for it, brother. It never happens unless you just step out there and just go all in. Get neck deep, brother. Get neck deep. And then Tom with all the kids from Huntsville. Tom with all the kids says, back in the mid-90s when I was an adjutant, there was talk about official signatures being blue ink only, and then color printers became a big thing. Yeah, we had to actually switch our notary stamps to stamp, actually, not the press kind where it presses into the paper, because you're sending so much stuff by either, you know, digital copy or fax, and you can't see the press down on that. We got to where we're having to shade everything with a pencil. We thought, why are we doing this? So they converted, and we're allowed to use actual ink stamp notaries now. They still look good. All right, let's take a break there, JP. We'll take that right now. I've gotten one dipper done and a whole bunch of other stuff. Phil Williams.
It was a substantial show, either way.
Substantial. I like it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.